How can we make the world better? By making ourselves better. The Dr. Joe Show explores how you can make positive personal change by using his groundbreaking and highly effective I Am approach to understand who we are and why we do what we do. Your small changes can have big effects.
Join us now for the Dr. Joe Show with Mark Stiles of Stiles Law and your host, Dr. Joe Schrand.
Dun, 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 dun. Welcome to the Dr. Joe Show. Dun, 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 dun.
Wait, was that the opening?
Yeah.
That was it? That's completely different than we've ever done.
Well, we have a different guest today talking about some really cool stuff. And well, I thought, you know, let's theme it up.
You themed it up. Da, 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 da. I mean, it's got this whole like
Marvel Comics or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. If I thought forward thinking enough, I would have called Becca and said, give me a quick theme song for a hero.
You know, she would have come up with it right away.
Boom.
You know, for folks who don't know, listening, my daughter, Becca, is now the music director for all the Marvel streaming shows out in Los Angeles. So if you watch She-Hulk or Miss Marvel or any of those, you'll see her name, just if you got to stick with the credits. So she's been promoted from assistant music director to music director.
Yeah.
I'm so proud. Cool. It's incredible.
As you ought to be.
Yeah. And in many ways, you know, I mean, what is she doing? She is creating music, as you say, to introduce heroes, people who we feel compelled to watch, to understand. We're absolutely drawn to them. And with that in mind, Mark, could you introduce our guest for tonight?
I would be honored, Dr. Joe. Tonight's guest is a professor emeritus of psychology at the University of Richmond, where he has published over 200 articles on morality, cooperation, leadership, and heroism. His books include Heroes, Heroic Leadership, The Romance of Heroism, The Handbook of Heroism, and The Encyclopedia of Heroism Studies. His works have been featured in media outlets such as NPR, USA Today, The New York Times, The Los Angeles Times, Slate Magazine, MSNBC, CBS, Psychology Today, and the Christian Science Monitor. He received the University of Richmond's Distinguished Education Award and was Virginia Council of Higher Education's Outstanding Faculty Member Award recipient. Please meet Scott Allison. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
It is so wonderful to have you, Scott Allison, here. I mean, what an amazing area of interest you have. I'm just curious, how did you start? How did you get interested in heroes, in morality, in cooperation? Where did it start?
Well, it's serendipity, really. I spent much of my early part of my career studying cooperation and selflessness and morality, and under what conditions will people do what's best for the group instead of what's best for oneself. And then I met George Goethals. Now, we can't underestimate the influence of George Goethals, who is a distinguished professor at Williams College, who I met when he was on sabbatical leave. And came to the University of California, Santa Barbara, where I was in graduate school. And he and I connected. And then when we somehow I got a job at University of Richmond on the faculty there, our leadership school drew him to Richmond. And it was kind of like, you know, Reese's peanut butter cups, you've got chocolate and peanut butter. And individually, they're fine. And then when you put them together, you get the Reese's peanut butter cup. That's magic. And so we realized, oh, my gosh, his interest in leadership, my interest in morality and underdogs. I was also publishing research on how we tend to root for underdogs and how we're inspired by successful underdogs. So it was sort of this Reese's peanut butter cup moment where we realized we've got to study heroism, because apparently psychologists, and this is in the late 2008, we realized no one had been in psychology had been studying heroism or heroes, what heroes are and what they mean to us and why we need them and why they're important. And so we said, we have to start studying this. And we have for the last 15, 16, 17 years. And so that's kind of what happened. It was a Reese's peanut butter cup moment.
Yeah, that's sweet.
What defines a hero?
What defines a hero? Well, you've just asked, like, you've just opened up this huge can of worms.
I can't wait. Let's go.
Because it's, nobody knows. I mean, so here we have this controversy, debate between, there's two camps. There's people like me who think, well, heroism is in the eye of the beholder. Obviously, my hero could be your villain and your hero could be my villain. To me, it's obvious. Grant versus Lee in the Civil War. I'm in Richmond. Of course, you've got Grant versus Lee. One person's freedom fighter is another person's terrorist. I mean, you've heard that before. You've got Trump, people who think Trump is like Hitler. And then you've got people who think Trump is the Messiah, then the chosen one. So it's obviously in the eye of the beholder. And yet there's this other camp in the heroism science literature that insists, that demands objectivity in defining a hero, and that a hero is not a subjective entity open to interpretation. A hero is someone who does great good and takes great risks and makes great self-sacrifices. And so we can distinguish a hero from a villain, just like we can distinguish an apple tree from a maple tree and a skunk from a raccoon. So this objective approach is very interesting. And I love the idea of studying psychological phenomena from the point of view of like zoology or biology,
where we sociobiology.
Yes.
And
thank you.
Behavior. This is fascinating.
So we have these two very different camps who really don't like each other very much. And I'm actually in the very unpopular camp of saying, well, you know, it's a mental construction. It's a social construction. So of course there's going to be individual differences, and it doesn't mean that one person is right or wrong necessarily, but sometimes I think some interpretations are better than other interpretations, but we have to honor the interpretations and understand the interpretations in order to figure out what heroism is from both an objective and a subjective standpoint.
So from the objective standpoint, is there a checklist that they have to get through to become a hero? Is there?
So, and I kind of mentioned three of the five checklists. So there's doing great good.
Yeah.
Selfless.
But again, define good.
Well, that's just it. It's like, and also a self-sacrifice. Well, what's a heroic level of self-sacrifice? And what's a heroic level of risk-taking? Because risk-taking is one of the boxes you check. They got to take great risk. Well, your level, what you consider to be a heroic level of risk may not be my level. So to me, there's all this subjectivity built in. And then the action must be voluntary. And I mean, there's like four or five things that the objectivists insists need to be met to meet the standard. But like you pointed out, it's in the eye of the beholder. I mean, I don't like the fact that heroism is in the eye of the beholder. I wish it wasn't. But a lot of the world's problems would be solved if it wasn't so open to interpretation about what's great good versus great bad. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a tough nut to crack. But that's where heroism studies is right now.
Yeah. And it's also degree, right? I mean, Mark is my hero for some things. You know, hopefully I'm someone's hero. My wife is my hero for some things. So I guess it doesn't have to be a global influence on people, but even those small moments.
Yes, of course. I agree. I mean, do we all have to be Gandhi in order to be a hero? Yeah. Or can we be someone who really goes out of their way to help a homeless person? And you're invisible, you're unsung. No one knows who you are, but you've gone to great lengths to help save a human length. And no one will ever know who you are. And history books will totally ignore you. But that can be very heroic. And so then you have heroism coming in many different forms, many different shapes and sizes. And it just makes it a very complicated phenomenon, actually.
Yes.
Can it be an event as opposed to a lifestyle? Can you be a hero for a minute and then turn it off?
Well, it's just, that's it. I mean, I got this argument with my mother-in-law about that. Well, Sully Sullenberger, he landed the plane in the Hudson River. He's a hero. And she said, No, he's not. He did one day he did this tremendous thing. He's probably a nobody the rest of the time. She believes a hero has to make a lifelong commitment like a Martin Luther King Jr. or a Nelson Mandela. And you can't just be a hero for a moment. And yet, heck, if you were on that plane that landed in the Hudson, wouldn't you think Sully was a hero who saved
for the rest of my life?
Of course.
Right.
So again, there's this very interesting thing about heroism that it just assumes many different forms and shapes and sizes, and people disagree.
I'm not sure why this came to me, but I think it was your comment on mother-in-law. So is it fair to say that behind every hero is an astonished mother-in-law? No, I'm sorry. It's just saying.
That's undoubtedly true. As married men, we know that.
That's not subjective.
That's not subjective at all.
Exactly.
Sorry, all you mother-in-laws out there. I still respect you. So this connects with the cooperation and the morality that you studied before. How did you come to be interested in those topics, morality and cooperation?
Interesting, because people often ask me, how did you get interested in heroism and morality and doing good and giving up the self for the good of everything in the group? And my answer is always the same. It's all, yeah, I am the least heroic person I know. And if you've heard the saying that research is me search. So I'm this heroic element in my life. I am this selfish, boring, unaccomplished person. I mean, yeah, you listed, I published a lot of stuff, but who cares? That's not heroic. That's probably selfishness. So I feel like I am just this sort of ordinary nobody who's never done any good. I suppose that's probably not totally true. But I think one of the reasons I study heroism is because I'm not very courageous, and I've never really stuck my neck out for anyone. And I do tend to like stay quiet when things need to be said. And so I really feel like heroism is a gap that's missing in my life. And I'm drawn to it because I think somehow God or the universe wants me to improve myself and become more heroic. And so I figure I better study heroism and maybe it'll help me become a better person, because I don't feel like I'm very heroic at all.
And my guess is a lot of people can resonate with that, with not feeling heroic. But one of the things that you're talking about is heroism is in the eyes of the beholder. And so for me, I have heroes, and those are our sponsors. So with that in mind, I would love to hear from our sponsors. We'll take a commercial break. We'll be right back with the Dr. Joe Show, Scott Allison, and heroism.
Hey, folks, thank you for listening to the Dr. Joe Show. We've been investigating whether or not we want to bring sponsors into our podcast. What are your thoughts? Do you know somebody who might be a good partner with the Dr. Joe Show, who may want to align their product or service with the Dr. Joe Show? Think about it.
And we're back with the Dr. Joe Show with Scott Allison, expert on heroism. Yes, expert. Scott, the journey of a hero, the hero's journey. We hear a lot with respect to storylines and really business bios. What is the journey? How does one evolve into becoming a hero?
Wow. Well, and here we get to Joseph Campbell. And I don't know how many of your audience love Joseph Campbell, even know about Joseph Campbell.
Can I bought my hand up. I went to Sarah Lawrence. Thank you, Mark, for putting my hand up.
You did not. You went to his college?
I saw him. I was in class. He lectured. I heard him live in our auditorium talking about all this stuff. So Joseph Campbell, I know who he is. But Scott, for those who don't, please explain this extraordinary human being and what he's done for us.
Well, Joseph Campbell, let's just say that George Lucas consulted with this unknown English professor. Was he an English professor? I'm trying to remember what department he was in at Sarah Lawrence.
I think he might have been in psychology at Sarah Lawrence or English, but
he was a comparative mythologist. So he studied mythology across the world.
Yes, that's it, mythology.
And he studied mythologies all around the world at different time periods in human history. And he discovered that all hero mythology tells one single story, and that all hero mythology, whether it's Native American mythology or indigenous Aboriginal Australian mythology or African or Asian, it's one story. And he developed a model of the hero's journey that all of hero storytelling has in common. And that includes Star Wars and Harry Potter and Katniss Everdeen and Atticus Finch, Rocky Balboa. All of our favorite heroes follow the same journey, essentially. And so his book was The Hero with a Thousand Faces, a single hero with a thousand faces. So this one monomyth, he called it mono meaning one, myth, pervades all of storytelling, all movies, all literature, plays. And it's the journey. And what's brilliant about Joseph Campbell is that he understood that we're drawn to stories about heroes who go on the journey. And often the person is a pre-hero. They're not a hero yet when they start out on the journey. They're in their ordinary world, and they're called to go out. Like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz was just this ordinary girl living in Kansas. But she was lacking something. She was missing something. What was she missing? Well, we don't know until the tornado hurls her into the land of Oz, where she has to get home, and all she wants is to get home. So the heroes leave home, the safe comforts of home. They go into a dangerous, unconventional world, and then they are given a mission, and then like finding home and finding Kansas in Dorothy's case, and they encounter villains and hardships, and they suffer greatly. But the good news is they find friends, allies, and companions, and mentors like Glinda the Good Witch, and the Scarecrow and the Lion and the Tin Man, and they find their way home, because whatever they're missing at the outside of the journey, the suffering and the mentorship and the help they get and the experiences of hardship give them the ability to acquire what is dispositionally lacking in them. And they undergo a heroic transformation, and they then return home and they give back to their original home. That's one thing we're missing in The Wizard of Oz. Dorothy wakes up and she's transformed, and the movie ends, and we never see that Dorothy goes on and becomes a motivational speaker. That's the heroic part of the journey, is that she should be giving back. It's implied, I guess, that once you're forever enlightened and awakened and transformed, you're going to give back to your home and to the people around you. And Joseph Campbell was brilliant, because he knew that this hero's journey in literature and mythology and in movies was the human journey. And the reason we're drawn to these stories is because they're calling us, the viewer, the reader, to go on the exact same journey of transformation. And so we think we go to the movies to be entertained. We're really going to learn how to be our best selves, our most heroic selves.
So why, and it's doing those hard things.
Yeah. Getting out of our comfort zone, suffering, taking incredible risks. Again, like kind of like that checklist of heroism. You got to, sacrifices are made, risks are taken, and we have to transform or die. That's the choice every hero makes. And like Joseph Campbell said, it doesn't always work out. Sometimes it's a fiasco and the hero loses. But the best stories that we are drawn to, the hero triumphs and is transformed. And we love them for that.
So I wonder whether we can just sort of explore this. Why does sacrifice need to be a critical part of becoming a hero?
Wow. What a great question. That's such a great question. Something must be given up in order for something better to be gained. And that's just a motif. That's a theme in all of literature. We have to give up something. We can't hang on to all of our old selves in order to move forward. There's baggage. There's wounds that need to be healed. There's gifts that need to be unwrapped. There's stuff that needs to be let go of. Things that need to be unlearned in order for learning to take place. Does that make any sense? I mean, I'm not even sure I'm making any sense.
No, it does. It makes sense. But again, it's such an interesting insight into who we are as human beings.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
We're saying, you know, the I am is saying who we are and why we do what we do, right? Why do we do what we do? And this idea that the only way to progress is to give something up.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I buy it.
Might be giving up your old self, giving up
status quo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe as simple as status quo or the beliefs you had about yourself or the world, some fundamental truth you thought was true about who you are and what the world is. And you have to let it go in order for something more insightful to enter in.
So is that part of being selfless as opposed to selfish? Like if I don't give something up, then I'm never going to be a hero?
I think so. And in fact, one of the things I want to argue, and I have trouble with this, is letting go of the ego. Because I really believe that our egos at the individual level and at the collective level, you know, our collective narcissism about our religion or about our country or our race, that this ego, this narcissistic attachment we have has to be abandoned if we're going to truly see that you and Mark and I are all one. We're inseparable. We are. There is no space or boundary between us. But our egos put up these barriers that cause conflict and friction and violence. And
yeah, it's so interesting. This is a wonderful discussion, Scott. I'm so grateful for it. I mean, my thought is, I'm really interested in what other people think or feel. I want to know why they do what they do without judging them. It's about respect, right? When's the last time you got angry at someone treating you with respect?
Yeah.
Right? Never, right? Never, because respect feels great. Anger is an emotion designed to change things. We get angry when we want someone to do something different, but being respected feels great. So we don't get angry. That's what leads us to feel value, which is what everybody wants. Think about every person you've ever met in your life. The common thread that binds us, we just want to feel valued by somebody else.
Yes, yes. I completely agree.
Yeah. And unfortunately, for millennia, human beings have increased their value by decreasing somebody else's.
Wow.
And then we're astonished the other person, the other group, the other country does the same. That's why we have the conflicts we have. But at every and any moment, you can remind someone of their value. And whenever you remind someone of their value, you increase your own value. And that's what leads to trust. Respect leads to value, and value leads to trust. So I'm wondering, can I just keep what I have, learn what you have, embrace that, incorporate it? Does that mean I'm giving something up? Or does that mean I've expanded my awareness and understanding of life?
Definitely expansion there. That's expansion. Absolutely. It's beautiful. I love it. And I think it's because your ego is not tethered to yourself. It's an expanded ego. It's not tethered. It's beautifully expansive, which it should be for humanity to thrive.
Yes.
And we've forgotten that as a society. We've forgotten that.
I agree with you. And that was why I'm so interested in cooperation.
Right.
Because in cooperation, that, I suppose for some people, that is sacrifice. Is that sacrifice? Is cooperation the same as sacrifice?
Well, this is interesting because there's two kinds of cooperators. There are cooperators who will do the right thing and cooperate regardless of the consequences to themselves because it's the right thing to do. And then there are cooperators that are very conditional. They'll only cooperate with you if they're not being hurt or taken advantage of themselves. Yeah. So it's a conditional cooperation. And I understand both of those psychologically, but I really admire the people who will do the right thing, like heroically, no matter what happens to themselves, because it's a principle they're going to live and die by if that's what it takes.
Yeah. And how does that connect with your studies of morality?
Oh my gosh, in a big way. Because now we're talking about truly enlightened humans who understand that the purpose of life is not to further this body and this ego and this person, that the true purpose of life is to love. And if I had to define heroism in one phrase, heroism is love in action. It's love in action. And love transcends human boundaries, collective boundaries, personal boundaries. Love is expansive and universal. That's what heroism is, love in action.
And the sacrifice there is not being completely self-focused, right? To love outwardly. And so it's the sacrifice is your ego, in essence, sometimes.
Letting go of this illusion that somehow I, this body, this person matters, because really the greater good is everyone's greater good, humanity's greater good, not my greater good.
Well, wow. I think this is powerful. And I hope our audience doesn't mind that I sacrifice the continuity of this to take a commercial break from my sponsors, who really are quite selfless. But let's come back to this love in action after we hear some of the action our sponsors are taking. We'll be right back with the Dr. Joe Show.
Hey, folks, welcome back. So any thoughts? Do you listen to other podcasts? Do you see how they do the sponsors? Is there a way that they're utilizing sponsors that you enjoy or you don't enjoy? I listen to Smartless, and I really enjoy how the co-hosts share the voiceover for the product or service. It's really funny for the most part, but it's unique. It's them really endorsing. Does that work? What do you think? And we're back with the Dr. Joe Show with professor, author, and expert on heroes, Scott Allison.
You know, it's wonderful having you here. It's interesting. Hero begins with here, doesn't it? Here. Oh,
yes, it does.
Here we are.
By the way, you'll have women who will disagree and say, well, it's Shiro. It's a Shiro. So it's kind of S/H. And there's a little controversy about that, because heroism implies masculinity. And then you've got the word heroin, which is kind of like the drug we shoot up. But then heroin, it's like actor and actor. You know how a lot of women prefer actor over actress?
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And yet research shows that when you think of hero, you do think of the man first. So there is a gender bias that I couple with.
And yet the first three letters of hero are her.
Good point.
Right.
Good point.
And it's like, oh.
but the research shows that if you say the word hero and ask people to list, free associate, they think of men.
So why is that, Scott? How does that connect with who we are as human beings and our evolution?
Well, and that's one of the unfortunate facts about heroism, is that it is a term that's been reserved mostly for men throughout most of human history. Until the last, I don't know how many years, some women would say it hasn't happened yet, but I would say that since the civil rights movement, since women got the right to vote, there's been tremendous progress in allowing women to pursue activities and professions that will put them in a position of heroism. And yet, having said that, I would argue that women have always been heroes, because when I ask people to name their hero, you know who the number one person is that people say is their hero is their mom.
Right. Right.
Mothers are mentioned as everyone's hero the most frequently compared to anyone else. And so that means women have always occupied the primary hero role throughout human history, I think. And yet, Yeah, people still think of men when I say hero. You're going to think of Superman and Batman and Gandhi and Mandela, right?
Not to get all shrinky and sociobiological, but, you know, men are at this remarkable disadvantage. Ever since what we call internal gestation, ever since we had babies born inside from, you know, growing inside as opposed to eggs outside, men will never be 100% sure that that's their baby. I mean, of course it's their baby. But I think that maybe has some contribution to this idea that, hey, give us something. You know, let us be heroes. But I could not agree with you more. I mean, my greatest hero, my mom, my wife, Carol. I mean,
yeah, that's fascinating. My grandmother.
Yeah.
My mother and my grandmother, even my daughter. It's like, oh, my gosh.
But there's this interesting word, and I don't mean to divert, that we use all the time when we say allowing, just the word allowing. What does allowing imply? It's like, we're going to let you do that, as opposed to encouraging. Right, as opposed to saying you can do that. Somehow, men have continued to hold on to this idea that we will allow women to do that, which unfortunately maintains that very strange sort of dichotomy. But you're right. I mean, Wonder Woman, you know, Superwoman, Miss Marvel, She-Hulk. Perhaps now we're moving more towards this idea that heroism is not confined to either one gender or even one age. I mean, Miss Marvel is a teenager. I'm curious from your point of view, having studied this, why now? What is it about where we are now that we can begin this absolutely appropriate expansion of heroism?
I it's a great question, and I don't claim to know the answer to that question, but I have a sense, and I don't know if you agree or disagree, that we're in a moment of history where women are finding their voice and they're being heard. Now, they've always had a voice that's been ignored or it's been suppressed. I'm sensing that women are finding their voice now, and we're getting more and more women who have clout, who are achieving positions of power in organizations, in politics, in media, influencers, and they're being heard and they're being respected. They're beginning to get that respect now. Before, they may have been disrespected or shouted down or suppressed. I think we're at a moment of history. Maybe it's a pivotal turning point where women's voices are being heard. And we're one of, have you noticed? This woman, this college woman basketball player. What's her name? Caitlin
from Iowa.
Yes, yeah. And I'm shame on me for not remembering her last name. But arenas are being packed. It used to be women's sports. The arenas were empty. Now people are packing the arenas to watch her do things that are extraordinary. It's beautiful. It's wonderful.
She just broke the all-time record. She surpassed Pete Maravich highest scorer,
What an athlete. She's making shots from almost half court. An extraordinary athlete. So she's now allowed to do and being appreciated and rewarded for doing things that used to be the domain of men. And I think this is a wonderful thing that we're seeing the boundaries. Again, I think breaking down divisions and boundaries is an important part of heroism. And the gender boundary, that non-dual view of gender is a beautiful thing because then it allows more inclusivity and allows us to expand our notions of what heroism is. And I love that women are finding their voice. Well, it's kind of shameful. We haven't had a women president yet, but we do have women candidates, and it's going to happen, obviously.
We came close. But there's an offline joke about that. Caitlin Clark.
Clark, again, thank you. It's not the Clark part.
So I'm just wondering whether this is actually wonderful for humanity to expand the idea that every human being at some point has been a hero. Is that fair? Do you think that every human being at some point, whether, as you said earlier, whether it's recognized or not, if we have that capacity within us, how does that change our self-perception that we can be a hero?
And I think you're right. I think all of us, and this is, I studied the underdog 15 years ago. All of us have been underdogs who have overcome adversity, who have been young and unestablished and unsuccessful and disrespected, and somehow we have prevailed and become something of ourselves. And I think the self-perception is important. If we would acknowledge, and maybe I'm talking to myself because I said I'm not heroic, and yet, of course, I've overcome obstacles. Of course, I was an underdog who prevailed over whatever adversity I faced, and all of us have. And maybe that kind of appreciation, acknowledgement that we have it in us, all of us are wired to be heroic in many different ways. And we tend to underestimate how heroic we can be.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that in some ways, we've been suppressed. And we've been, in some ways, you know, maybe our fascination for Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman is because I want to be like that, as opposed to I am like that.
That's a fantastic point you just made, because the worst thing any of us can believe is that heroism is reserved for just special elite people, and I could never reach that level, because heroism is a condition, a state of existence that every human being is wired to achieve in many different ways, in many different forms throughout the lifespan. And it's terrible if we think we go to the movies or read a book to read about only these special people who can become heroes. That's just not true. So that's so, I like that idea of the self-perception has to be cultivated, that we can all achieve amazing things if we put our minds to it, if we surround ourselves with the right people and the right conditions and the nurturance, it can happen.
Yeah. And I think that creates hope.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And I think when a human being has hope, I think they're more likely to be cooperative. I think they're more likely to consider the hardships of somebody else.
Yes.
I don't need to be selfish about this. You know, remember, you know, listeners, from an evolutionary point of view, we evolved in a world that was incredibly competitive. I mean, we were not the biggest animal, the fastest, the strongest. We were these isolated mammals scurrying around, hoping not to be lunch. We were the prey. And then we formed these social groups. And our survival potential increased so dramatically, human beings are everywhere. But to access the protection of the group, you must contribute to the group, which means you have to have value. And so I wonder, Scott, from your point of view, whether creating this image of a hero gives us a place where we can store value, where this person is who I emulate, because they are so valuable to all of us. As you say, the hero's journey.
Yes.
Sacrifice.
Sacrifice and giving back. Kindness. See, it's amazing when you think about, well, people might think, oh, hero, that's way too much work. It's just way beyond me. It's like calculus and math. I can never be calculus.
But you guys are still awake, right? I mean, whenever we say calculus, people immediately fall asleep. Stay awake. Okay, go ahead.
But the thing is that, you remember in, what was that movie with Billy Crystal in the early 90s when Curly says, there's one thing. What was that movie? Oh gosh, I'm blocking
we'll
it.
We'll
but
find.
It's very simple. The formula for heroism, it can be as simple as kindness. Simple as just being kind, smiling.
Hey.
Hugging someone. You can make a difference in someone's life by exhibiting the most simple gesture of a hug, a smile, a kind word, some encouragement. I think encouragement is so underrated because so many people are struggling and need just simple encouragement, a phone call, a coffee, a hug. And so we think of heroism as, oh, it's this monumental superhuman achievement. No, you can distill heroism down into the simplest acts of kindness, which, like you said, breaks down barriers and divisions and creates this expansiveness of humanity, which is love in action, what I call heroism.
So it's believing in someone else.
Valuing
someone else.
That you have someone, Joe and Mark, who believed in you when no one else did, and it made all the difference.
Yeah. That is why I am so grateful for our sponsors, because they believe in us. They believe in us. We believe in them. Let's take a commercial break, hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back with the Dr. Joshi.
Hey, welcome back. And again, we're super grateful for you listening to the Dr. Joe Show. If you have anyone that you think might be a good sponsor, shoot us an email at drjoepodcast@gmail.com. drjoepodcast@gmail.com. Give us your thoughts about the show, too. We're wondering, are we talking to the trees or are people really gaining value in this? Please let us know. Thank you again and enjoy the rest of the show.
And we're back with the Dr. Joe Show with a riveting conversation about heroism and what it actually entails with author and professor Scott Allison.
Yeah. What it entails and how it could be, can be, is in all of us. Mm. So with that in mind, Scott, you know, the Dr. Joe Show is really based on the I Am approach, the idea that we are always at a current maximum potential. We're doing the best we can at every moment with the potential to change in the very next second to another best we can. No one's broken. We all are always valuable. Because the four domains, your home domain, your social domain, the biological, and the I see, the way I see myself, where I think other people see me, because they interact, a small change in any domain can have a big effect. We don't need to change everything. So, Scott, given what we're talking about tonight, what small change can you recommend to our listeners?
That's a really good question. And I don't pretend to have given this tremendous amount of thought, but what immediately occurs to me is almost a cliche in today's world, which is self-care. Because you've heard when you're on an airplane that you put your own oxygen mask on first before you heroically save other people with oxygen. And think, taking care of ourselves is the only way we can become the kind of person who can take care of others and help others and be kind to others and make a difference in others' lives. I can't be any good to anyone in this world unless I go to get my sorry fat ass to the gym and work out and get sleep and eat right and hug someone and tell someone today that I love them. So we're talking about emotional care, spiritual care, physical care. And then I'm in a position, once I've got that oxygen, because I think that oxygen puts me in a position to care about others and help others. So that's one thing that comes to mind is I can't just care about other people without caring about myself first. So there's a balance. Now we're talking about a heroic balance between self-care and other care, which I think is very important.
So I think a lot of people have difficulty with that. I agree with you. Because somehow taking care of yourself first means you're selfish. Are any heroes ever selfish? I mean,
it's funny because, you know, remember Rocky Balboa? I'm going way back. I don't know why I'm thinking of this. But he's training. He's eating those raw eggs in the blender, which, by the way, almost made me want to throw up. But he was doing this to become big and strong, and he was training, and he was being selfish because he was becoming his best Rocky Balboa self, wasn't he? And Indiana Jones was going after all of these ancient, valuable archaeological artifacts because there was a little selfishness in there.
Yeah.
And so if we pay attention to what heroes are doing, they're not always selfless. They're balancing self-improvement with helping the world and other people become better as well.
Interesting. So caring for yourself. I know this.
So it's almost the invisible hand. What's good for me is good for humanity.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Adam Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you got to be careful because remember Wall Street and
greed is good.
And so you got to be careful because I don't want to say greed is good and selfishness is good because I believe a truly fully potentiated, if you want to become self-actualized, like in a Maslow hierarchy of needs kind of sense, it isn't all about me and it isn't all about other people. It's me getting food. I remember the biological needs at the bottom of Maslow's pyramid and building myself up to a point where I can be of good to the world. And because I think it's all in service of the world. And I really believe that love is what drives the human race. And like, it can be a little self-love, but let's face it, too much self-love is narcissism. So we have to be very careful to take care of ourselves, remembering that that's in the service of eventually helping other people become better.
Yeah.
That's the end of the hero's journey. And by the way, that's the final step of the 12 steps of AA, is that these recovering alcoholics are building themselves up and becoming better humans. And then the final step is go out into the world and share these gifts with other alcoholics and help save other people from ruin. And that's the hero's journey, is helping oneself with the goal of making the world a better place.
Hmm. You know, I work a lot with folks with substance use, teenagers as well. And one of my phrases for them is contribute to society to help with your sobriety, you know?
Rhymes.
Thank you. Right, because when you contribute and you remind someone, you're increasing your worth and value. And the more valuable you feel, it's a whole different neurochemistry. It's oxytocin, not oxycontin, oxytocin. And that is happiness.
Yes.
Which is different than pleasure.
It's win-win. You help someone, you're helping yourself. It's beautiful.
That's right.
It's good.
Yep.
It's, like you said, it's got a physiological component. Yep. Oh, my God.
Contribute to society.
You help, the more you help people, the bigger you feel, the stronger, the more you can help, the more you can help. It force multiplies at that point.
Well said, Mark. Mark, that's it. And
beautiful. I think that's love in action.
It is love in action.
Love in action.
And everybody wins. And so then the question is, why do we live in a world that's so competitive, like you said, competition, 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 when really what we're talking about is cooperation, cooperation, cooperation.
Right. And you know, that we can probably have you back for that, because as we said earlier, one person's hero may be another's villain. And so there's an exploitation sometimes of heroism. Is that fair to say?
Exploitation of heroism?
Yeah.
Where you take advantage of someone who's selfless and...
No, when you take advantage of somebody who thinks you're a hero.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's bad. Yeah. Well, we see that in politics all the time, don't we?
Yeah.
That's another podcast right there.
Because
that's now we're getting into leadership. And I love the relationship between heroism and leadership. And one of the things I've said in my books is all heroes are leaders, either directly or indirectly. You're leading. But not all leaders are heroes, as we know. And so what can we do to make heroism and leadership together so that all leaders become heroes? Certainly we know all leaders are capable of becoming heroes.
Yeah.
But many leaders have too much ego, they have too much narcissism, and they don't understand the giving back, the selflessness, the love and action component of public service.
We definitely can spend an entire hour talking about that.
About leadership.
So the small change, folks, care for yourself. It's okay to do that, because then you can care for others. Put your oxygen mask on first so you can help someone else. rate small change. Second truth of the I am. Everyone is interested in what you think or feel about them. Everyone has an I am. They're interested through their IC domain, what you think or feel about them, which is going to affect their biological domain. Because you know, it feels different when you feel respected or disrespected. And you're part of someone's home or social domain. So the second truth of the I am, you control no one. You influence everyone. You get to choose the kind of influence you want to be. Professor Scott Allison, world expert in heroism, person who has studied this and shared their knowledge. What kind of influence do you want to be?
And maybe all the writing and speaking that I do is my only hope for being heroic, because I'm obviously not saving people from burning buildings. And yeah, I do some nurturing. I have friends I nurture and hug, but in terms of, I do want to make a difference. My goal in life, I feel this calling. It's the universe kind of propelling me. I'm more of a messenger than I am an agent. I want to help people understand their heroic potential and that they're on the hero's journey and that the world needs them to go on the hero's journey and to get off their couches. You know what I want more than anything else? I want people to get off these devices, throw them in a bonfire. Let's pour gasoline on these things. Because so many millions of young men and women, but are home doing their gaming.
Yeah.
When they need to be out there making a difference and building themselves up and becoming better humans so they can serve the world in a loving way. And technology is a double-edged sword. And I'm very concerned that the message is not being reached, that these are destructive devices and they have their usefulness, but we haven't learned how to tap into the usefulness yet in that healthy way.
And you're raising your cell phone when you say that. So for those who are audio only. So Professor Allison is saying, let's get rid of these, raising the cell phone, because you're right, because this cell phone, it's meant to be social media and connect us, but I call it anti-social media, because in some real way, it has separated us.
It isolates.
It isolates us. It
isolates us.
Yeah.
And at great cost, emotional and social cost. And the hero's journey requires people to get off these devices and dare to get out into the messy world and get hurt. And who wants to go off their comfortable couch and go out into the world and get hurt? And that's the problem, is that there's a lot of fear and it is a scary world out there. And I don't blame people for hesitating to go on the journey. I've certainly have hesitated to embrace discomfort. Who wants to embrace discomfort? And yet discomfort, we know, is not the enemy. So to take risks and to get out of our houses and to do things that are going to stretch us and cause us discomfort is what we're meant to do. It's hard for many millions of people to do it, but I'm trying to convince people that's the journey that Joseph Campbell talked about. It's how we're wired and designed as humans.
Yeah. So many things came to mind, but the isolation of cell phones makes me wonder whether that has contributed to the stress and cortisol response we have in the world, because we're social animals. Right? And if we're isolated, we're going to be more afraid because we could be prey.
You mentioned how we evolved to be collaborative and cooperative. The only way humans could survive was to work in groups and throw rocks at the lions.
Yeah.
50 humans throwing rocks at a lion, they're gonna defeat the lion. A human by themselves is going to be eaten. We're meant to be out there cooperating and getting dirty as kids. Kids need to be out playing sports and getting in fights and learning how to work in groups
and do theater.
Instead of being in their houses on their devices.
That's right. You're right. And the problem was that, the 50 people throwing rocks at a lion started throwing rocks at other people. Like, my group has to compete with your group, which is just, you don't need to do that anymore. We don't need to do that. We have so much more to talk about, but we're coming to the end of the show. So care for yourself. That's a small change. And you want to bring the message to people that we can cooperate with each other, but put your oxygen mask on first. It's okay to do that.
And don't be afraid to take risks that get you out of your comfort zone, because we're not meant to play it safe and be alone in our rooms playing Tetris or watching Netflix. We're meant to be out there dealing with people. The messy world is calling us and needs us for us to survive as a species and to thrive individually as well. Like, because as we said, it's win-win. When we get in there and mix it up and love each other, we're helping ourselves as well.
Folks, let's put some love in action. Let's do it. Scott, it's been such a pleasure having you here tonight. Please come back. We'll have so much more to talk about. Mark, as always, I appreciate you putting on your oxygen mask and then helping me out. Because you always
well, you're my hero.
Likewise. Folks, we'll see you next week at the Dr. Joe Show. Thanks for tuning in. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thanks, Scott.
Good night. Thank you.